Scott and I don't get together to choose choir anthems, but often they fit anyway with what I'm speaking about for the day. Today, as we continue on our Lenten journey towards the cross, first, we join Jesus on the journey in this passage from John as he's just days away from the Passover and he stopped off to see Mary and Martha. Let's hear a scripture from the Gospel of John. 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany, where Lazarus lived, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. Here, a dinner was given in Jesus' honor. Martha served. Martha always seemed to be serving. While Lazarus was among those reclining at the table with him. Then Mary took about a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume. She poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, who was later to betray him, objected. Why wasn't this perfume sold and the money given to the poor? It was worth a year's wages. He did not say this because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief as keeper of the money bag. He used to help himself to what was put into it. Leave her alone, Jesus replied. It was intended that she should save this perfume for the day of my burial. You will always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me. May God help us to take to heart this word from our Holy Scripture this morning. As we move through the season of Lent and journey toward Easter, we have engaged in some of the most confounding human questions, challenges, and fears that assail us in the silent, still moments of our lives. Human conditions that we chew on when we're alone and not distracted by the everyday tasks of living. Things like loneliness and regret, finger pointing, loss of control. These are often, for me, I don't know about you, but they're musings. Late night musings as we seek to move through them towards enlightening and a renewed zest for life. They are in many cases the gateway to greater wisdom, knowledge, and growth as we engage them and are brave enough to wrestle with these issues. Our lives, in fact, are richer when we embrace the reality of the all-too-human conditions that confound us, when we turn off the lights and let our minds wander in that dusky, no-man's land between wakefulness and sleep. Today, as we move toward Holy Week, which begins next Sunday with Palm or Passion Sunday, we encounter perhaps one of the greatest challenges of the human condition, that of death. It's inevitable. We cannot talk about the journey of life without talking about death, in fact, because from the moment that we are born, the only thing that we can be certain of is that we will die. People around us will die. And for many of us, that invites all kinds of emotions. For some, it's fear or anger. For others, maybe a little bit of curiosity. Some would rather remain in denial, as if death really doesn't exist. Thinking about death sometimes may make us feel nostalgic or experience some regret. It's a huge and necessary conversation that we need to have, at the very least, with ourselves. Why then are we so reluctant to talk about it in our society? Why, if we all experience it, is it not comfortable for us to speak about? Why are we afraid of our own mortality? Perhaps this is best expressed by the great philosopher Woody Allen when he said, "I don't want to achieve immortality through my work. I want to achieve immortality through not dying." But it was the great novelist Oscar Wilde who said it best when he said, "One can survive anything nowadays except death." In the gospel passage I just read, John recounts a poignant moment between Jesus and Mary when she pours the perfume on his feet and wipes his feet with her hair. Yet Judas is there and he's not too excited about this whole thing, and he protests this tender expression of love. He sees it as extravagant waste. But Jesus responds with this: "Leave her alone. She is preparing me for death." How do we prepare for death? Our own or someone else's? To ignore this subject is to avoid one of our greatest opportunities for growth and meaning in our lives. Admitting to our own mortality allows us to see our lives in the light of the limited time we have to enjoy them and to take every opportunity to make them count. It's not really that death is a problem. It's normal. It's as normal as birth. It doesn't need to be a foreign or taboo subject, or even uncomfortable. It really is a part of everyday life. It seems that life itself is what gets in the way of us accepting death, because really it's only the living who have a problem with it. There are many reasons why this might be so. Here's a list I put together of some of the reasons why we avoid the topic. Actually, it's a list that was generated at our Lenten conversations this past Wednesday. One of the reasons why we're afraid of it maybe is we don't know what comes next. We don't know what to expect when our lives end. And perhaps we're afraid. It's that great mystery, the uncertainty of what happens after this life. And so we experience some angst around that. Or we anticipate, perhaps, that death involves pain, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And we as human beings do everything we can to avoid pain. Woody Allen again once said, "It's not that I'm afraid to die, it's I just don't want to be there when it happens." Some of us also have this notion that people should only die at a certain age. So when they die before that, it reminds us that we're vulnerable. We tend to stay in denial. But when somebody our age or younger than us passes away, it's a bit too close for comfort. So we stuff it down and keep it there and go on with our lives. We also experience pain when somebody else dies. So we avoid thinking about it because we don't want it to come up, that pain, again. Perhaps some of us think that if we talk about death, it'll jinx us, it'll come sooner. And whenever I do marriage prep with couples, one of the questions is, "Have you prepared? Have you got a will? Have you talked about if you have kids, who would look after your kids if something happened to you?" Really, we want to gloss over that part. We don't want to talk about that. We're talking about new life. We're talking about marriage. We don't want to talk about the possibility of death. But we have to. It's a reality. Many people avoid talking to somebody who has just lost a loved one in their lives, or they avoid talking to somebody who is dying, because we don't know what to do or say. So we become uncomfortable talking about it. I'm sure there are many other reasons for avoiding the subject of death. In the fall of 2014, when I got very ill, I've just been back actually for a year, And the outcome of that was not all too certain. I didn't know where I was going. And people were very comforting and cared, and I was grateful. But only one person at that time brought up the specter of death. And I was grateful. I was grateful. Not that I wasn't willing or wanting to talk about it, I actually did. It's just that people want to avoid that subject. I send my sermons out to a couple of friends who send me back comments, and one of them, who's another minister and very dear friend, actually said, "I was afraid to talk to you then about death." As long as we live in denial, though, and find the subject uncomfortable, we prevent others from doing the work that they need to do, which means that some people may feel that they're approaching their own death alone and afraid because nobody is willing to talk about it. Being comfortable talking about it takes the drama out of it and normalizes it for people. This week I read an article by a Dr. Carl Pilmer, who's professor of human development and gerontology at Cornell University. He noted in the article that he wasn't really a big fan of death himself, but he's a professor of gerontology. He stated that there's now a whole school of psychological research based on the concept of terror management. This theory posits that the awareness of our own inevitable death creates the potential for debilitating terror, against which we then find ways to psychologically defend ourselves. Then he said that if anybody should experience this kind of terror, it's the very old. They are, he said, after all, statistically much closer to the end of life than those of us under 60. No matter how healthy or active they may be today, they are genuinely, this is his words, at death's door, or at least on the front steps. So he decided to bite the bullet, look 80, 90, and 100-year-olds in the eye, and ask them, when people reach your age, they begin to realize that there are more years behind them than in front of them. What are your feelings about the end of life? He said. He discussed what they thought about dying and whether it concerned them or occupied their daily thoughts. And what he found actually surprised him. There was no terror. What the elders told him was that the intense, overpowering feel of dying is very much a young person's game. He did not detect denial from them, but rather a matter-of-fact approach to dying and a willingness to discuss what it means to them. It's true, by the way, research bears this out, that it shows lower death anxiety the older we get. Most of the elders expressed a high degree of comfort with their own deaths. And although they seemed unconcerned about the fact of dying, the elders did have one end-of-life recommendation for people of all ages. And this was it. Plan for it. Plan for it. Planning for the journey was seen as responsible behavior as well as providing a significant source of comfort for people. And these sentiments were echoed by many. The experience of tidying up one's possessions emerged as a metaphor for tying up the loose ends of life, bringing things together in a meaningful whole rather than a disorganized set of unrelated parts. This is perhaps why we have trouble with young people dying. And young people themselves have trouble with it. Some older folks, too. They, and perhaps we, feel that we haven't lived full enough lives to begin to put together the parts of our lives. Yet this is the reality. There has never been a time in history when young people didn't die as often as old people. Never in history has that not been true. In fact, who do we send off to wars? It's not old people, it's younger people. Who goes out in cars? You know, there's never been a time in history when people haven't died at any age. This, believe it or not, is normal. We face the possibility of death every single day. Preparing for it allows us to face it realistically and honestly with less anxiety, for we have addressed what we need to and then can deal with our own mortality once we're honest about it. I've often asked the question in my courses, how long should people live? How long should people live? And most of the time I get answers like, till they're old. The answer really is, people should live as long as they live. There's never been a set time for people to live. Whenever someone dies, they have lived their full lives. And we will all die, by the way, with a bucket list. Everybody. If we don't, then we've stopped living before we die. If we don't die with a bucket list. One of the reasons why we have funerals or memorial services is to begin to tie up loose ends, to tell the stories, to see the threads of another's life coming together to create a whole, and to reflect on our lives as well. And the parts of our lives that maybe we haven't paid enough attention to. Pondering our own deaths and the deaths of others has the potential to help us live life more fully. And this is the Christian affirmation. Jesus said that we are to live abundant lives. We live that in light of the fact that it's limited. We should live now. Several years ago, I went home to visit my parents, many, many years ago. And I was sitting having a conversation with my dad. And as we were sitting there, and I didn't know what triggered me to say this, but it might have been part of the conversation now, as I recall. And I said something like, Dad, you know, I live a long ways away. Something could happen to me or something could happen to you. But I said, I want you to know, if anything happens to me, I'm okay. I've lived a good life. All is well. And he said the same thing. Yep, I'm happy. I've lived what I've wanted to live. I've done a lot of things. I'm okay. And we parted on that. We didn't talk about it anymore. But we'd each said what we needed to say. And when he did die, even though I was deeply sad, that conversation came back. And I was grateful that we had had it. That he felt that he had lived a good life. Recently, a lot of attention has been given to the subject of physician-assisted dying or death, as it's being addressed by government and law now. Less than 2 weeks ago, the first person outside of Quebec got permission to end her life. And she did so in Vancouver shortly after that. And while the United Church has not put out an official statement on this very sensitive and potentially divisive subject, our current and our previous moderators have offered some thoughts to the Special Joint Committee on this very topic. You can find the full letter on the United Church website, but I wanted to read an excerpt written by our former moderator, Gary Patterson, and affirmed by our current moderator, Jordan Cantwell. Gary Patterson writes, "For Christians, life is a sacred gift from God and needs to be valued and protected. But we also know that both life and death are part of the whole created order. Life itself is not absolute, nor certainly is death. To speak of the sanctity of life is to affirm God's desire for abundance of life for all creation. God is love, and the Christian affirmation is that God's love is the only absolute. In life, in death, in life beyond death, God is with us, says our creed." So the United Church's theological tradition is not to suggest that believing in the sanctity of life means that any attempt to end life must be prevented. Instead, What we are called to do is first listen to the struggles of those who are facing hard decisions and to make sure that they are not alone in those decisions. And second, to trust people with difficult decisions about their own lives. Reverend Cantwell affirms these thoughts and then continues to lay out some suggestions about it by saying that every opportunity to affirm life and personal agency must be explored, including, she said, better opportunities for those who are suffering or contemplating the end of their lives. We must do everything to ensure the quality of life. Life is sacred and to be treasured. Death is a mystery that we all encounter. They're part of the same continuum. Death, for those with faith, creates a sense of wonder and curiosity and anticipation. For while we do not know what to expect, we affirm our belief in eternal life, however we might conceive of it. We trust that God, however we imagine God, will embrace us as we transition into the next phase of our lives. This is the journey we will all take. This is the journey that Jesus took as Mary prepared him for his death. The good news is that the story doesn't end there. The resurrection reminds us that life comes after death. Death does not end with a period, it ends with a comma. New life awaits. Psalm 23, a favorite of many, says that even though we walk through the valley of the shadow of death, we will fear no evil because God is with us. In life and death and life beyond death, this is the eternal promise. God is with us. It is grounded in the assurance that we will embrace all that life has to offer, including death. And as we move towards the cross, we will not stop there, for we know the rest of the story, the promise of life that awaits us on the other side. Thanks be to God. We'll now spend some time in quiet reflection.